Anyway, I don't know how we got on that. What were we talking about before that?
Welcome to the Talk Your Bar and Grill podcast. Jeff Johnson here. Thanks for joining us. We're on to episode three, part three of our schema play theory discussion. Previously, we did part one was just kind of a general overview of schema play theory. Part two was about transporting. Those are episodes 692 and 693. And now we are back to talk about connecting. Lisa Murphy's here. Kristen Peterson. He is here. Heather Burnt Sandy, Professor Non-Pom, that early childhood nerd, is here wearing
so
her monocle now that she's a professor.
A cat eye monocle.
Cat eye monocle.
Well, of course, a cat eye one.
Oh my gosh. Amazing.
I want a cat eye monocle.
Yeah, it needs
I
to
think
be
I would do a goat because they have rectangular eyeball.
Cat eye opera glasses. That's what you need. And then you look down the down your nose at students. So when you're looking at their assignments, I think that'll be great. So connecting play skips. What are we talking about?
Connection play schema.
So I'm going to defer to the experts here for a second. And I have my notes. I'm ready to jump in, but I would love for them to guide us here. Jump in, Heather.
Yeah, Heather, you're the one who's got it fresh on your mind.
Master's on this. Come on, man.
Yeah. So, well, let's just define it, I guess, the connecting schema. So I guess for people who haven't heard the other two episodes, just a brief definition, you know, schema play theory is about repetitive themes and actions we see in children's play. And there's a bunch of them, but there's 8 or 10 that are the most commonly talked about. So today we're doing connecting or connection schema, which is really just an interest. Children have an interest in fastening and joining things together and taking them apart. And you see them doing it across different contexts of your, you know, it's not only with the blocks that they're connecting. You see them maybe using tape a lot, or you see them using magnets a lot, or you see them knocking things down or you know, really wanting to do their own zippers all the time. So there's lots of different ways you can see this schema in children's play, but it's all about figuring out across their world what kind of information they can get about connecting and disconnecting from all the materials they have.
Are you willing to speak to a hot minute about the fact that just because they're connecting for maybe 2, 3, 4 days at a time, that doesn't mean that they're autistic?
Oh, sure.
I think that sometimes people react to that and think that because there's repetitive behavior that we have to jump to a diagnosis.
Yeah. So there is one of the words that's connected with autism for some people. And it's because there's, you know, for autism, there's a list of indicators that might mean maybe they could be autistic. And one of them is repetitive play. And what comes to mind for people is lining toys up.
Correct.
So I've had lots of early childhood teachers ask me, because this little guy likes to line up the cars on the top of the shelf and he'll do that forever if I let him, he must be autistic. And that's not the case, of course. If you wanted to worry about whether a child was autistic or not, you would need to see lots of different things from that indicator checklist, not just repetitive play.
Thank you. That is where I hoped that you would go with that.
Yeah. Children learn best when they're able to repeat experiences. So repetition is a good thing when we see it in their play.
So we need more tape in early childhood settings.
Definitely, we need more
and
tape.
And we need to do those linking Christmas chains, you know, where you cut the strips and you make the chains go together. You need that not just in December, potentially.
Yep.
What?
Yep. You need glue and tape.
What? You need a lot of glue and staplers.
Ooh, staplers are so fun.
Yeah.
I did.
You also need a tolerance for breaking things apart, like breaking the train track apart or knocking a block tower down.
Right. And I'm glad you brought that up, because sometimes we're like really comfortable with the like, oh, connecting, but then we forget that there's a disconnecting. after the connection comes a disconnection.
Right.
And
so,
and
because
actually,
you get new data about the things you connected when you take them apart and disconnect them.
True. And I'm going to add, I'm interrupting. And you can't see me, so you didn't know I was ready to do that because I had my blue marker pointing at your face. Is that for, in case you're brand new there, if you made the thing, you need to be allowed to be the one to break the thing. Mm-hmm. And that's like, you know, kind of dabbling in the psychology. Yeah. Psychology. But if I built it, I need to be the one to break it. So if you want to break what I made, you need to be able to ask me. So just that. Yeah.
So, technically, is that disconnecting? Is that part of connecting, or is that its own thing?
It's part of it.
Yeah. So some lists will have the schema named as connecting and disconnecting.
Okay.
Some lists will just say connection, but whichever word you're using to talk about that schema, taking apart is part of it.
I like to remind people that the stuff that they've been doing for forever that they didn't realize was like plugging into schema is like all those pasta necklaces that everybody has made since like day one. Like that's connection. That's connecting. Mm-hmm. Oh, I didn't realize that.
One of our favorites for connecting and disconnecting is magnetiles.
Oh, yeah.
Disconnect magnetile towers. It is the most satisfying crash.
Like popping a zit. So fast. Like popping a zit. Boop. It's so satisfying.
Lisa.
Am I wrong?
No, you're just not wrong.
We have that. So we fill our classroom with tape. It's not always the beautiful colored tape that you see. It's painter's tape and masking tape because people.
It comes off the wall.
Yeah, and there are days where the whole classroom is covered in tape, and those like that is my favorite. I love walking in and seeing tape everywhere because they don't just like. Yeah. It's like they're connecting the whole entire room. It's not just a thing. They're connecting the whole room. It's amazing.
Mm-hmm. We had one kid who would say that I want to hang this up. And you're like, okay, so how are you going to hang it up? Well, I need some tape. Do you know where the tape is? No, but Mackenzie does. I'll ask Mackenzie where the tape is. And then I will be able to hang this up. And one kid actually, they commandeered, they took the back wall of the back door. That's where all her stuff would always be like displayed with the tape. Tape. I love tape. You want to give your preschool teacher a Christmas gift? Give her a bottle of wine and a roll of tape.
Conversely, I will be spending a lot of the next couple of weeks trying to scrape old sticky masking tape from two semesters ago up off of the floor of the classroom before I leave this job.
Well, and to that, okay, let's be real. Use the painter's tape. The blue painter's tape does not leave that residue.
Right. That doesn't help me now, but it's good for people listening who are just starting.
For future reference.
For future. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking weaving. Weaving is connecting, yes.
Yeah. So
and
all those
cards.
Did you guys ever make those little loomy things where you made the little things of cotton fabric or whatever it was and make the pot holder things? Those little.
Oh, I did.
Absolutely.
So that's what that was. What about lacing?
And what about those bracelets? Those bracelets that were really weirdly popular about 5 years ago. And the kids-
I was just going to say that we have a huge bowl of those rubber bandy things. They're like little, they look like braces bands. And we taught some of the teachers in my program taught the kids how to use their fingers.
Finger weaving.
Finger weave those bracelets. They're like loom,
yeah,
rainbow loom bracelets. that is connecting. And like 3 year olds are doing it. It's amazing.
And I did some research before we were going to do this. You know, all those kids that put like a leash around the kids, another kid's head, and they're like dragging them like a dog. Yeah. Come on, kitty. Come on, kitty. Yes. That's connecting schema. Come on, get down there. Let me put it.
And so along those lines, I think we could, if we want to support this, we could get a little bit more friendly with letting kids play with lengths of rope longer than 8 inches long.
Yeah. Yep.
Tape.
Tape.
I'm tape. Such a fan of tape. I love
tape. Just going to say it.
Merry Christmas. Happy birthday. Here's some tape.
Yep. That would be great.
Well, magnets.
And then the empty tape rolls. Yeah.
Legos, trains, even the Brio trains, that's connecting. So you're like, oh my God, they're always in the trains. They never leave. Well, maybe right now they just really like the satisfaction of seeing those pieces fit together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So how about mixing up a batch of chocolate chip cookies?
Is that connecting?
You're connecting those ingredients together, aren't you?
Sure.
Is it, or is that something different?
It's also, it would also, I mean, it could be connecting. A lot of times the schema overlaps. I mean, that would definitely be transforming.
Hmm.
So, you know, what it depends on is what schema that child who's helping you make cookies is into. If what they're really into investigating is how materials transform when you mix them, then that's the schema it is for them. And if what they're really curious about and exploring is how do things stick together and can you get them back apart again once they stick together, then it would be a connecting theory for that kid.
So
I mean, there's a little famous connecting is rotating the same. Yeah.
No, that's circularity and rotation and circularity.
Listeners, quick sidebar. If you're into connecting ingredients and chocolate chip cookies, get a hold of me and I'll tell you where you can ship them because I would like to benefit from the
fruits
of your labor.
Oh, I'll send you cookies. Shut up.
Lisa,
I didn't know
you keep saying that and I never get them.
I know, but
God, she's all fucking talk
for a while.
Don't
about
you have a
like,
cookie recipe that has like kettle chips in it that you says so?
Ew.
A super secret recipe. You said it out loud. I'm going to get into trouble.
Kristen, nobody would have known if you wouldn't have said that.
Nobody will be able to make the connection.
Thanks, Jeff, for bringing us back.
Fair enough. I will send all of you those cookies.
What about hammering a nail or screwing a screw into a piece of wood?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. So, or just having nuts and bolts to take apart and put back together.
Sure.
Spider webs with string, you know, when you put the chairs out and everybody's got a, you know, a thing of yarn and they make a little thing. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yarn.
And holding hands with your friends.
Ugh.
Oh.
But you don't have to hold anyone's hand.
Okay. As long as.
And I actually got online and they actually said that Ooblick is a connection.
Oh, sure.
Of seeing how it's wet and dry and wet and touching. Yeah. And yeah, that was kind of cool.
Pulling pieces apart. Yeah. The connecting schema is one that there's a few that a lot of the behaviors that would show you that a kid was involved in a connecting exploration are really easy to interpret as misbehavior. So
specifically with connecting?
Yeah. I mean, things like taking things apart, knocking stuff over and using too much glue, all that kind of stuff.
I would actually argue that most schema behavior is ripe for the opportunity of somebody
to be misinterpreted.
Yes.
Yeah.
In fact, I have actually, so here's my nod to Heather. I gave my nod to Kristen in the last episode, but my nod to Heather in this episode is that I have done my infant toddler workshop so many times in the last couple of weeks that it's actually morphing into its own new workshop, and schema has to be plopped into this. So thank you for that.
Oh, my pleasure.
So if connecting can be seen as misbehavior, if we want to support it, how, what are the things we can do on our, just physically practical things we can do on our environment to be better at supporting that kind of activity? Mm-hmm. One that pops into my mind right away is breaking up with our disdain for tall towers. Because if you need to build tall, and you can only build up to your, the middle waist. Of your waist or your armpits or whatever it is, it kind of limits what you can do along those lines, huh?
Yeah. And yes. Then you shut off the learning and you complain that no one sees you as a teacher, but you're shutting off learning all around you.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah. And the other one is, you know, when you're like that, control, that kid who may not be autistic, is lining up the blocks and the line goes outside of the boundaries of the block area.
Yeah.
Keep the blocks on the carpet.
Being able to break up with that kind of arbitrary borders for play is a kind of an effective way to support this kind of activity.
But also, I just want to throw this in too. I don't want to start a whole nother autism direction, but even if you do have other indicators and the kid is lining things up, let them line things up. It's still something that they're exploring and learning from.
Yeah,
exactly. I've always said that if they weren't getting something from the behavior, they wouldn't continue the behavior.
Yeah.
So why do I think that behavior needs to stop?
Yep.
Because I don't like it. I don't need you to like it, right? I don't need you to respect it. I need you to make room for it.
Mm-hmm. There's a quote that I like a lot that I can't remember which of the schema books I have. It came from, but one of the authors I had read said, it's the responsibility of the practitioner to make sure that schematic play is noticed, valued, and given time. So the biggest thing we can do to support it is to notice it, learn about it, value it, and give it time,
space.
So I think adjusting yourself as the adult in the room is the number one biggest thing you can do to support schema play, and then think about things you can add to the environment that would build on what you notice they're exploring,
or take away from the environment to build on our previous
episode. Exactly. Good point.
Yeah.
Any final thoughts on this one before we pull the plug?
No, I enjoyed this one. Well,
that went fast. Are we done already?
Anybody got anything they want to plug? Kristen, want to plug Instagram or any place else you are on social media?
Instagram is where you can find me for the most part. It is at learning.wild.
Professor Nonpon, anything you want to plug?
I go at the podcast.
Oh no, what's it called?
You have a podcast?
I have a podcast. It's called That Early Childhood Nerd.
Ah.
Oh, I just ordered a sweatshirt, by the way.
Nice.
I'm excited.
So check out Heather's past 200 episodes on the show, and it is a very popular early learning podcast. I know because I see the statistics. Lisa Murphy, anything to plug?
My book, Red Leaf Press. You can buy all of my books at redleafpress.com.
There we go. And I got a thing coming up. It's going to be June 11th, 2021. If you're listening to this in 2023, it's not going to do you any good. But friend of the show, Samantha, Sam, and I are working on a project. Sam has been doing policy examples for the Playvolution HQ site for a couple of years now, and we've done some talking, and that might be being turned into a book about play policies.
Oh, congratulations.
Because
I've heard the idea. I'm so excited about it.
If you want to support play, it's good to have policies that are play friendly in place. And so on June 11th, we're doing a free kind of chat and cocktail hour about play policies. If you go to my Explorations Early Learning website, you can get a link to that if you're interested in joining us. We just released the link the other day, and we've already got some people joining us. And so it's just a discussion, and you know, it could be a pitch session and whatever it turns out. But Sam wanted to collect some information, data, some insights from people. And we're going to do that and have cocktails at the same time. Although you do not have to drink cocktails
if you
join us. Cocktails aren't mandatory. So check that out if you're interested. can't make cocktails mandatory.
You can. It might skew the data, but you can.
I guess you could. I mean, through Zoom, I've got no way of enforcing it. If we were doing it in person, I could maybe peer pressure you into doing a shot with me, but that's hard to do via Zoom. This has been the Child Care Bar and Grill Podcast. Thanks for listening. Back soon. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
This has been an Explorations Early Learning Upstairs Studio production.